so as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Colossians 3:12, New American Standard Bible. We learned in the previous episode that an individual's perspective can significantly influence how one reacts to any presenting circumstances they have encountered. It is understood that the resulting mental picture that is formulated in the mind has the potential to empower when it is based on truth in relation to reality. Conversely, a mentality formed from false expectation, biases, fears, or vicarious trauma might also deplete an individual of energy, motivation, and in extreme cases, one's willingness to continue living in the situation they find themselves. Still, how does an individual formulate their perspective when the source of their experienced trauma is a natural result of them showing compassionate care for another? Throughout these episodes, we will continually refer to the terms secondary traumatic stress, burnout, compassion fatigue, and their characteristic symptoms. Though no clergy caregivers, healthcare professionals, nor caregivers of family members may have the exact definitions of their experiences with these conditions at the forefront of their mind, these servants most assuredly do understand the depth of the impacts these issues can have on them, their ministries, their family lives, and their self-satisfaction. These conditions are pervasive across a broad spectrum of caring for people impacted by traumatic stress-inducing circumstances. When left to deepen its influence on the caregiver's perspective, it can be potentially destructive to their once positive and hope-filled mentalities. Therefore, we must better understand what these conditions are and who might be susceptible to their corroding properties. Let's begin with secondary traumatic stress, also known as STS. It sometimes refers to vicarious trauma, and it is a secondary trauma that results from indirect exposure to another's trauma experience. Dr. Charles Figley, the director of the award-winning Traumatology Institute and founder of the Journal of Traumatic Stress, submits that secondary traumatic stress is the natural consequent behaviors resulting from knowledge about the traumatizing event experienced by a significant other. It is the stress resulting from helping or wanting to help another traumatized or suffering person. Now, burnout has shared core causes and symptoms of secondary trauma. However, burnout differs from secondary trauma in that exposure to clients' trauma is not the precipitating factor. Burnout results from long-term exposure to work environment wherein support may be minimal, but the demand is ever increasing. Research has gathered the features of emotional exhaustion, diminished job performance, and an increasing pessimistic view of the workplace and its clientele to be associated with burnout. Lastly, compassion fatigue is a term that has often been used as a more user-friendly substitute for secondary traumatic stress. However, compassion fatigue is described as an acute, affective phenomenon that engenders high levels of stress for caregivers in which caregivers' symptoms parallel those of the original trauma victim's experience. Defining these three conditions in succession, as we just did, leaves us with a cleaner understanding of what they are. It also gives us a partial listing of the characteristics each of them possesses, and a sense that they are all closely interconnected and overlapping. What is conspicuously absent from these definitions are the specific titles, professions, pay scales, or degrees held by those impacted by such deflating symptoms. There is no suggestion that some people are and some people are not susceptible to being affected by these conditions. No. Instead, the only distinguishable feature of those who might succumb to such disorders are those tasked with the role of caregiver. For many, when trauma is thought about, it creates an image of suddenness, one that involves the instantaneous devastation or a scene of horrific carnage, maybe due to a terrible auto accident. Another increasingly common scene of trauma is a senseless school shooting that results in the tragic loss of innocent lives. We can go on and conjure up even more related scenes like this that are so prominently now a part of our everyday existence and that do attract the most public notice. Nevertheless, not all instances of trauma are of the sudden or instantly earth-shattering variety that draws the notice of the media or curious bystanders. Some occurrences in life are as devastatingly impactful as those grabbing all the headlines. Yet these are relegated to the privacies of individual circumstances. If multitudes are invited to attend those, they would no doubt choose to look away or silently slink away, leaving the individual, the family, or the community to fade into a darkened memory. Then there are those chosen to be the ones who stand through the compulsion to leave and their wishes for it to all just go away and to get over their inevitable bout of why me-isms. These are those who are compelled by a power greater than self to show compassion and offer hopeful encouragement, even when the circumstances are seemingly beyond hope. These are those who can only find the resources to do these things from their personal relationship with the one who has been there, done that, and promises to empower them if they choose to follow him. Only he can guide them to offer a witness of hope to the hopeless. Only he has taken the finalities of death and the grave, and by his resurrection, he has promised eternal life beyond what one can comprehend on this human side of reality. There is only one that continues to send out messengers of hope that can readily say, I am sent me to tell you. While the health professional and clergy caregiver has come to be quite familiar with many of these intimate occurrences of dealing with the traumatic stress of others, there are many more untrained in the skills of medicine or the concepts of pastoral counseling that God calls to stand and deliver Christ-like compassion to someone who might need to make it through this day while desperately seeking the mercy of tomorrow's dawn. The following is such an occasion when God recruited the most unlikely candidate to do just that. In the rural community of Rosefield lived a quiet woman approaching the early portion of her fifth decade. Her name was Carolyn, but most of her childhood friends in that small community had affectionately begun calling her Caro because of her sweet disposition and approach to life. The younger inhabitants of the little town addressed her as Miss Caro and often would drop by her home when they smelled the aromas of one of her delicious chocolate layer cakes cooling by a window in her kitchen. Miss Caro did not mind the flow of company that came happening by her back door, asking how she was or if there was anything she needed from the store. She somehow always knew and would come quietly to the door with a slice of warm cake and send them smiling on their ways. A few of her oldest friends who came by often would pull up a chair on the back porch with her and enjoy their slices with a cup of coffee. Sometimes those conversations would go on for hours. Truth be told, Miss Caro stocked her pantry to be able to deliver these treats to the community and to secure the probability of having company from friends and neighbors, especially on those days when companionship was a premium pleasure. You see, she had lost the love of her life, her husband of 25 years, after his very short-lived battle with colon cancer only 18 months earlier. He was diagnosed in July, had exploratory surgery the following January, and died from a post-surgical pulmonary embolism as a blood clot entered his lungs only 3 days after surgery. Suddenly, at the age of 45, Carolyn had become Miss Carol the Widow. One Sunday afternoon, as she was returning from church service, her phone rang, and for reasons beyond her knowledge, the first ring created an uneasiness in her spirit. Nonetheless, she answered on the third ring as usual, with the appropriate greeting of the day. This time, it was a pleasant good afternoon. On the other end was an unfamiliar voice stating, "Miss Carol, you might not know me, but I'm Chelsea Davison's daughter, Crystal." Recognizing her mother's name from a relatively recent death announcement in the church bulletin, Miss Carol replied, "Yes, baby. I am so sorry to have learned of your mother's passing. How can I help you, sweetheart?" In a very reluctant tone, the young lady on the other end began, "I don't even know how to say this." And then she abruptly began crying uncontrollably. Carol replied, "Sweetie, take your time and talk to me. Just tell me what's wrong." Taking a few extra moments to collect herself, the young lady continued, "Miss Carol, you know my mama just died a few years ago from breast cancer. I had been so scared to get checked myself, so I just didn't." Although Crystal had started to weep again, she tearfully added, "Well, anyway, I finally went and got a mammogram about 6 weeks ago and found out I have the same kind of cancer my mom had. After I went to the hospital to get a more thorough examination, they discovered it had metastasized into several of my other organs." Now, in an all-out scream of horror, Crystal yelled, "Miss Carol, they only gave me 6 months to live." Now, Carolyn sat quietly on the other end of the phone line for several moments while the young lady sobbed across the phone connection. Then, in a state of bewilderment, Carolyn replied, "I am so sorry, baby. I am so sorry. What can I do for you?" Without hesitation, Crystal said, "Miss Carol, I have watched you my whole life and always admired how you lived. You just had something that I always wanted in my life. I almost approached you several times about it, but I was simply too ashamed to do it. Anyway, I don't even know how you're going to feel about this, but I want you to help me to get ready to die. I am terrified, and you are the only person I believe can help me do that. Miss Carol, would you walk with me? I cannot do it alone, and I don't have anybody else I want to help me but you." Stunned beyond description, Carol sat quietly in the middle of her kitchen, not knowing what to say to this young lady on the other end of the phone. And without thinking, she blurted out, "Crystal, baby, give me your phone number. I will have to pray on it and call you back real soon, okay?" Honestly, that was all she could think of at the moment, and the only thing she thought would get her off this line quickly. So Crystal gave her her phone number, and they both hung up nearly instantaneously. There, in total silence, within their respective homes, were two women buzzing from that conversation and virtually standing at the very edge of the unknown. The elder, standing in her kitchen, holding her head between her hands, realizing that she had not even fully grieved her late husband, was now asking God, "How am I supposed to do this thing? How, Lord? How?" The younger lady, now lying on her living room floor, face down in regret. "Oh my God, how could I have been so stupid to even ask that of her? She will probably never speak to me again. Oh my God, what do I do now?" Crystal had imagined this scenario ending entirely differently. Not by the woman she idolized all her life abruptly leaving her hanging and virtually hopeless, as time felt as if it had tremendously sped up, although it had only been a moment since speaking to her. Crystal felt an insurmountable separation between her and Miss Carol, and a desperation that suddenly had begun setting in. Carolyn never could have imagined anyone would ask her to help them accept their own death, especially since she had not entirely accepted the demise of her husband. Now those feelings she thought she had buried had been exhumed and immediately causing her to relive the traumatic stress of witnessing his painful, tragic exit from her life. Now these feelings could no longer be ignored. She desperately wanted to help Crystal, yet could not grasp even the first step to do so. She felt the pressing need to pray, but suddenly was wondering and unsure if God was even listening. Which of those two women can you most identify with? As the older woman, would you pass the young woman off to the pastor or a more qualified counselor and live out your days with the thought of letting her down in her waning ones? How would you go about dealing with your own grief issues while attending to the needs that she will surely have? As the younger woman, can you understand how vulnerable she feels after opening her soul to another whom she is now not even sure cares about her? Do you now protect what little pride you have left and simply reject any further contact with Miss Carol? In these situations like this, are there really any right or wrong answers? But one thing for sure, there is no time to waste before life-altering decisions must be made that will impact both parties significantly. As always, if there were any thoughts or feelings stirred from this episode that you would like to share, or if there's an idea you would like to have discussed on future episodes, don't hesitate to send me a suggestion at the following email address: kstokes60@appliedbalance.net. Your identity is optional. We will do our best to include it in an appropriate upcoming episode. In the next episode, let's walk with these two women as they come to individual decisions to approach this predicament, and how their resolutions would impact their eventual pathways to applied balance.